Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too. Hello, podcast listeners. Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Sam Barker from the Hugh James Abuse Team, and I'm here with Alan Collins.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you for tuning in today. Look, today we're going to talk about a fairly modern day issue in relation to child sexual abuse, and that is the use of the internet, which has recently been highlighted in some criminal cases and also some studies which show the prevalence of this in modern day society, as unfortunate as that is. We're going to say from the outset that today we do discuss some fairly troubling things and the existence of some fairly terrible child sexual abuse. So bear that in mind going forward when you're listening to this podcast. So look, what we're going to talk about today, two things: a recent case involving the conviction of Andrew Whittet, who's a former army officer, and then some cases that we've been involved in, specifically actually one case, the matter of Douglas Slade. And then we're going to talk about what we think the ramifications of this recent criminal conviction are and potentially what kind of civil cases can arise out of it. How does that all sound, Alan?
Well, that sounds like quite a daunting task. So, yeah, it's difficult subjects, but interesting ones, and hopefully will be of interest to listeners. So I think we're going to start off, are we not, by looking at the case of Andrew Whittet, who's recently been convicted and sent to prison. So perhaps, Sam, you could give us a bit of background for the listeners.
Sounds good. Yes, it is going to be a fairly daunting podcast, but nevertheless, let's get straight into it. Look, the recent case involving Andrew Whittet, as you were saying, Alan, he's a former army officer. He was sentenced to 3 years and 2 months in prison in relation to six counts of child sex charges. The National Crime Agency confirmed that Andrew Whittet made 49 payments totaling £8,584 between January and July 2017 to set up and watch child abuse abroad.
And that means actually what? Does that mean he was actually paying to view, so to speak?
That's right. Well, in fact, it goes further than that, in that he's not purchasing illegal content that's been pre-made online, but rather he's actually facilitating the abuse himself. I think a good way to refer to these people is an armchair pedophile, essentially, because they are paying somebody, usually in another country and almost always from disadvantaged backgrounds, to facilitate, set up, and carry out or cause to be carried out the sexual abuse of a child, and that is live streamed back to where Whittet was watching here in the UK.
And I think the victims were actually on the other side of the world in the Philippines.
That's right. The victims were in the Philippines. So, you know, this is obviously absolutely reprehensible behaviour and something that has unfortunately, it's now become known, is a very common thing in society, and it's very unfortunate. What happened was, in the end, he pleaded guilty to arranging the commission of child sexual offences and attempting to cause or incite a 9-year-old girl and another girl under the age of 16 in sexual activity. So he was convicted in relation to those charges. So Alan, I was thinking, why don't we start out by talking about this form of modern day child sexual abuse? It's tragically become all the more common. But then also, if you could touch on perhaps the recent ICSA hearings, that's the Independent Inquiry into Child Sex Abuse hearings that we're involved in on behalf of an organization called PRADA in the Philippines and in the Protection of Children Outside the UK hearings. So perhaps the listeners would be interested to hear about that.
Well, I think we're all familiar with the concept of sex tourism, which is where, obviously, people go abroad in order to fulfil their needs, to put it politely. And a particular tragic problem is that men, in particular from the West, Western Europe, Australia and the United States as well, will go out to Southeast Asia and abuse young people out there. So they are the sort of classic sex tourists, and there have been a number of very notable cases where eventually these characters get caught. And we also now have this situation where paedophiles are able to actually stay in their home countries and watch live on their computer screens the abuse of children. You know, they facilitate it, they pay for it, they give directions, they tell the adults what to do and all the rest of it. And it's a lucrative business, so to speak, for those involved. And it's all terrible. It's very difficult to investigate because it's basically being done under the radar. The use of the internet is becoming increasingly sophisticated. I suspect many of us have heard of the dark web. Most of us probably don't actually really understand what that's really all about and don't really want to know what it's all about. But obviously it's very clever criminals being able to use the internet in order to facilitate their crimes and to come up with schemes and devices and methods that evade detection. So it's a big issue for law enforcement, trying to understand what is going on and trying to see what's happening on the dark web. And this has come before ICSA, the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse. It's looked at all of these various issues. It's also looked at how do you try and prevent all of this. And one of the issues that comes up is the fact that convicted sex offenders are able, it seems, with relative ease to travel from one place to another to commit their offences.
You found an article online, didn't you, Alan, a Reddit thread when we were researching this topic on behalf of Prada when we were instructed to act in the ICSA hearings. And you found online a kind of forum where people actually discussed how they could evade detection and be able to travel abroad despite their convictions.
Well, that's right. This seemed to be a sort of legitimate website set up for offenders when they come out of prison, and it sort of gives them advice, and some of that advice was all about how to go to various countries such as the Philippines, you know, various countries in Southeast Asia and so on, and what the various pitfalls were as regards getting into these various countries. So it seems that if you're really determined to go to these countries, in spite of having a criminal record for sex offences, you'll be able to find a way. Now, I know in the United States, they stamp their passports if you've been convicted, so that when you go through security at the airport, you should get picked up. And I think Australia now take the passports away, but other countries, they don't have that. And you can't always be sure what kinds of checks are going to be carried out in these countries in Southeast Asia when you turn up at the airport. So there's real practical problems. No one country is doing the same as other countries. Therefore, if you've got differences, it seems to me, between various countries in what their standards are, you are going to create loopholes and you're going to create opportunities for offenders who are hell-bent on going to Southeast Asia and abusing children to be able to do that. And that is the challenge for our times. And I'm hoping that ICSA really does identify these issues and makes recommendations to the UK government to get its act together, because I still think an awful lot needs to be done. There's a lot of talk, but it's action that matters.
Absolutely. And I think one of the other things that popped up in relation to ICSA was that, or at least from our submissions, was showing how countries like the United States have invested a lot into prosecution of US citizens who travel abroad to commit offences. And the only way to really do that is to invest in law enforcement and the collection of evidence abroad. And we've seen that work in the United States. It was our submission, or Prada's submission, I should say, that more money should be invested in this country to hold people accountable for their acts, their criminal acts overseas. It shouldn't be the case that people, sex offenders, can think that they can jump on a plane, do whatever they want to do overseas, and then never be held accountable. It needs to be the case that those people are brought to justice.
Which I think brings us on to Douglas Slade. Shall we have a chat about him at this stage?
Definitely. Let's speak about Douglas Slade and let's speak about that case, because it does illustrate the possibility of victims obtaining civil justice in the UK, even in circumstances where they have never obtained criminal justice, either abroad or indeed here for the actions of a UK citizen. So I think that's very relevant to this topic. And Alan, why don't you explain the case, given that you were there from the outset?
Yeah, well, Douglas Slade is a UK sex offender. He's currently serving a very long prison sentence for sex offences that he committed on children in Bristol way back. He came to some prominence in the 1970s because he was part of some campaign that wanted the law changed so that it was no longer illegal to have sexual relations with children. So he was part of all of that. And then he seemed to disappear off the radar. My understanding is that he was getting too much attention, so he decided to disappear. And he ended up in the Philippines, where he lived for a number of years. And the story is a tragic one. There is in the Philippines, and he was able to abuse many, many youngsters, boys, who he was able to groom. They were youngsters who came from quite impoverished backgrounds, so they were susceptible to being groomed with money and sweets and all the rest of it. And he was able to abuse them quite brazenly for quite a long time. Came to the attention of the authorities out there. They made various attempts to prosecute him, but nothing ever came as a result of that. Basically, he was able to get away with lying, and the prosecutions weren't terribly effective from what I understand. But anyway, the end result was he was never successfully prosecuted. But eventually, I think because he was so brazen in what he was doing, he was making life uncomfortable for the neighbours and so on, and he was becoming a bit of a nuisance. So he had no choice but to leave the Philippines and come back to the UK, where he was promptly arrested and successfully prosecuted for the offences that he had committed in Bristol many years ago, and that's why he's now in prison. Now, the young people out in the Philippines, they never got any justice. Their prosecution authorities never managed to succeed in prosecuting Slade, so they never saw any kind of justice. But anyway, to move the story along, Father Shay Cullen of Preda, which works out in the Philippines, decided, well, something had to be done. And Father Shay Cullen's been a very vocal proponent of clamping down on the likes of Slade. And so he was very much minded of needing to get some very public justice for the young people that he was aware of that had been abused by Slade. Anyway, so through Father Cullen and Preda, we at Hugh James represented a number of the youngsters out in the Philippines who brought here in the UK a successful civil claim against Slade. So they decided, well, if we can't prosecute him through the criminal courts, let's go for him personally ourselves. In other words, let's bring our own case against Slade in order to get some justice, which would be a finding by the court in the UK that the abuse had happened, and the judge ordering Slade to pay compensation for the terrible damage that he had inflicted. So we brought a case here in London in the High Court against Slade, which he defended. There's a trial. The boys all had to give evidence, and Father Shay had to give evidence, and various other people had to give evidence about what had happened or allegedly happened. And the judge had to decide, well, is this case made out or not? And the judge found, entirely in the boys' favour, that their allegations were true, that Slade had committed these terrible crimes against them, and made that ruling in their favour and ordered Slade to pay them compensation. So that was an important case because, as far as we're aware, it's the first time that young people in a faraway country have been able to successfully sue their British abuser in the British courts. So that demonstrates that victims can use the English legal system to get justice. And secondly, it demonstrates that no abuser is actually beyond the reach of the law, because often that is what they do think.
Exactly. They're not immune from any kind of accountability or responsibility. And I think that that case demonstrates very well how the court system can work effectively to deliver some form of justice? Because I think what you're saying there, Alan, is that these children had never received any kind of judgment or vindication from the courts in the Philippines in relation to Slade's conduct, or indeed any kind of compensation in relation to it over the years. So it was great to see that kind of case being able to succeed here. Obviously, it's a complicated logistical case. We had video links set up all around the world, but it is a testament to the kind of technology that the English courts are able to put in place to allow this to happen. So great result there. What that brings us around to is whether children who have been abused in other kind of circumstances, i.e. from this, let's take this case of Wittet, for example. Now, those children in the Philippines, much like the children that we represented, but Wittet is here and hasn't actually ever laid a hand on anybody. Now, of course, for the criminal case, he can still be prosecuted under certain criminal offences. But in our team here, we've been thinking about it. You know, how could these kids obtain some sort of justice in relation to what this UK citizen has done to them? And so what we've been looking at, certain causes of action that I think we should talk about now because it's interesting, that would allow these children or children in that kind of position to be able to receive some sort of compensation. So thinking about it, kind of drawing it back to first principles, obviously when you sue somebody in England for in tort, it's suing them for something they've done to you that is a wrong and you have suffered damage. Now, in this case, the situation really isn't any different. This Wittet is sitting in his room, but he is paying and he's facilitating somebody else to commit these assaults and batteries, which are actionable wrongs here in the UK that you could sue somebody for. So looking into it, there's actually a Supreme Court case, which I would say is highly relevant for this kind of cause of action. And that is a case called Sea Shepherd versus Fish and Fish. I won't go into the details of the case, but that case set out that a defendant can be jointly liable for a tortious act of the principal if the defendant acts in a way which furthers the commission of the tort. Certainly, in this case, Wittet, being one of the defendants, arguably, is paying for the tort to be committed via live streaming. So certainly, we're looking at that. We're looking at the defendant acting in a way that causes the commission of the tort. And he does so in pursuance of a common design to secure the doing of acts which constitute the tort. All right, so that sounds rather complicated, but let's break it down. He's paying for the assaults, the sexual assaults to be committed. It's obviously the end game is that those assaults be committed. That's what's being paid for, and that's what he's effectively paying to see through this live streaming service. And in that way, he's acting jointly with the person who's actually committing those acts. And we would say that in that case, he should be found liable, that he should be found to have commissioned and jointly acted for that tort to be committed. And therefore, arguably, it doesn't necessarily matter that he's here when it's committed. What do you think about that, Alan?
Right. You know, it's he, Wittet, is involved in some kind of joint enterprise with the adult who is in the back room in the Philippines, so to speak, who's actually carrying out the act or is orchestrating the act at his behest. Mm. So it's no different to him actually being there and in person and taking part. Just because he's on the other side of the world is neither here nor there. He's directing, he's telling, he's asking, he's jointly involved at the very least in what's going on. So I am sure a court would say that he is part of that tort, he is part of those assaults, he is taking part in the actual assault or sexual assaults that are taking place in that room.
And also, you raise a good point there as well about how he's paying and directing things like that. I guess arguably also this other person could be seen as an agent, and therefore we could bring in vicarious liability for the criminal acts that were committed.
Well, yeah, you know, that's another way of looking at the same issue. A court is going to say, you know, you're the one who is responsible, Mr. Wittet. You're the one who's paying, directing, commissioning. You're the one who is asking this particular person to do whatever or arrange whatever. So, yeah, He's the master, the director, the ultimate abuser.
Yeah, look, I think that I strongly feel that the fact the abuse occurred abroad, but at the behest of a UK citizen, shouldn't protect them from civil liability. And certainly it doesn't protect them from criminal liability, as we've seen in the case of Whittet. And the thing about it is, it shouldn't be overlooked that these children who are being affected abroad will suffer in many of the same ways as somebody who has been abused here will have those ongoing mental problems that are associated with childhood sexual abuse. They're certainly not immune from that either. So in those kind of cases, very difficult for those people to move on without access to justice.
Well, geography is no respecter of abuse, or abuse is no respecter of geography. Geography is just immaterial. The fact that there's distance between the victim and the abuser is neither here nor there. And the law has been a bit slow in catching up. But as the criminal case of Whittet has shown, Whittet has been prosecuted for committing abuse offences which actually physically took place thousands of miles away.
And that's a good development. And let's see if we can do something to help change the law in regard to this even further following the Douglas Slade case in relation to civil liability.
Do we want to mention some of the statistics? Because they are quite disturbing but interesting and relevant. So perhaps we can just touch on them briefly to round up this particular podcast.
Let's do that. Look, you can the listeners can also look online at our show notes where we've outlined these statistics. But look, frankly, the statistics are disturbing. There was a Microsoft commissioned report as part of the Internet Watch Foundation, it's called, in May 2018. That report is called Trends in Online Child Sexual Exploitation, Examining the Distribution of Captures of Live-Streamed Child Sexual Abuse. And a number of images were analysed in relation to that, and they were divided up into certain categories, which you can read about in the show notes. But the results were as follows. 96% of those photos depicted children on their own, typically in a home setting such as their own bedroom. 98% of imagery depicted children assessed as 13 years or younger. 96% of those were girls. 40% of that imagery fell into the higher magnitude category, category A or category B. And 100% of the imagery had been harvested from original upload locations and was being redistributed on third-party websites. What that means is that they'd been uploaded from where the original source was and they were put on these dark web streaming sites and perhaps he purchased or somebody signed on as a membership to be able to access those photos. So it shows that there's a lot of business in this area, as terrible as that is.
Yeah, and we don't need to understand the intricacies of all of this, and we'd rather not know about the intricacies of all of this. But what we do have to understand is that it's happening, it's here and now, and it has to be dealt with. And the National Crime Agency is looking into all of this, and it says that basically, you know, child sexual abuse involves forcing or enticing a child to take part in sexual activity. And this is happening, whether we like it or not, through the use of social media, the internet, the World Wide Web, and so on. And it's catch-up time because the internet is evolving all the time. If we just think about it, you know, iPhones, they're all over the place. Youngsters use them. And whether we like it or not, iPhones can get misused, innocently misused sometimes by the innocent, but the images that they have gone and taken then can be exploited and so on, and a lot of harm can result from all of that.
Yeah, true. There's so many intricacies and nuances in relation to this. I personally met some of the officers in the Child Exploitation and Online Protection Command Unit at the NCA recently, and it was good to see people who are so committed to curbing what is such a terrible and reprehensible, you know, set of crimes that are happening through the use of the internet. They're unfortunately very busy, but given how prevalent this is at the moment, but taking great strides in trying to combat this kind of crime, and we can see that in this case of Whittet, which is great. So thank you everyone for listening today. The details of those statistics are outlined in our show notes, as are the links to Alan and I, how you can get in touch with us and request any further topics or anything you would like us to talk about, which we're more than happy to do. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.